Welcome, everyone, to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee meeting. It is March 20th, 2025, 6 p.m. And we have quorum. I have Alice, Janina, myself, Chuck, Tay, and Kim on the line right now. Barb cannot attend tonight. And with that being said, welcome. Does anyone have any disclosure of conflict of interest? Oh, and here's Jane. Okay, no conflict of interest heard. Did everyone have a chance to review the meeting minutes that Larry sent out? I know they're a little hard to read because AI isn't always perfect with their interpretation of comments and words. But do I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
Motion to present the minutes as presented.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, anyone opposed? Minutes are approved, and welcome Melissa as well.
Thanks for having everyone.
Yeah, any update from ADOA? You might want to talk about our snazzy new business cards and the trifold pamphlet.
Yes, a refurbishment, I guess that's a word. On the trifold and the business card for you. If you're interested in that, Lori, I'd be happy to have some printed out for you to send that to you guys. Help with recruitment if you're out and about, little small business cards. They're generic and it's got the QR reader on it. So it's easy to go right to the application and right to your landing page of the IOC website. So they're nice. So if you're interested in that, I'd be happy to get you a box of cards and I don't know, 50 trifolds. If you want more than that, let me know. Be happy to do that for you.
That'd be great.
Okay, yeah, I'll make that happen for you. The other thing was just the annual training for the TradeCorp training. I know that.
I know.
Jenny, I was gonna, if you need help on that, let me know. I will certainly send you the instructions for that.
I have the instructions. I don't know if you got my email. I can't get into the right TradeCorp site. And then one does load and the screen is completely empty and it's been that way every time.
Interesting.
Maybe you have a
Alice,
link.
Are you listed as Alice Miller by chance, Anita?
I'm Alice Miller now. I was Alice Klein.
Okay. I'll follow back up with, I had you listed as Alice Miller on the file. I wasn't sure. I thought that was you. I wasn't sure. But I will follow back up with TradeCorp to have them reissue you the training. And you have the access code on my email that I sent you on the original email.
Oh, I just need to dig that out. Okay.
Yeah, I'll be happy to send that back out to you again. Same with you, Janine, and anybody else that's, I think y'all are the last two to get that done. So
yeah, no, I'll get it done.
Awesome. I appreciate your help.
I just wanted to give a quick thanks to Tara Morgan for helping me get my certifications done this year. She came pretty late this afternoon to help me get that completed. So thank you, Tara.
Yeah, thank you, Tara. I know we were played phone tag a little bit, and then we just conversed on emails, and so we got that done. So thank you very much for making that happen.
You're welcome. I was going to email you, but I didn't know what time you were coming on, but I was going to email you. So
not
thank
a problem.
You.
Sure. Thank you, Tara. I appreciate that. That is really the only update I had for the committee tonight. Any questions or issues that I can try to answer or get answered for you guys?
I think it'd be really helpful this week. I think it was this week or maybe last week. I was trying to get some help from a mental health judge to come and give a informational session on GEI pleads and all the statutes and what they mean, what they don't mean. And since he thought we worked for the hospital, and I had to clarify that, I had to send him a really long email. And I said, I had to copy all of our IOC and what our statutes are and what we're over and what we're not over. So I'm waiting for a response, because the first time he asked me to ask Mike Sheldon to have their counsel do it, which was not appropriate.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me know if there's anything I can do for you on that end of it. If that doesn't work out, I can try to get somebody from the AG's office to help, to help us to get that answered for.
If you don't mind sending another email with a link, because I think I'm, my link expired for the training.
Okay, Jenny, I'll make that happen for you.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you.
So Lori, let me know if that doesn't work out for you. And then we do have a conduit to the AG's office that can help us. She might have some options for us.
Okay. I think that would be good. We have had other people offer, but their attorneys, and some of the attorneys are in litigation with the hospital. So I didn't think that was.
Yeah.
I'd rather have it from a judge that is interpreting, is over mental health courts and trying to explain exactly what the statutes mean, what they don't mean when they talk about stable remission and what they're looking for from the hospital clinical team. So we're better educated on that.
Okay.
The only other thing that do we have any updates on the ombudsman that ADOA hired?
I'm not aware of any new updates. I know Sarah's on the call. I don't know if Sarah wants to chime in here, but I know she's been doing a lot of training.
Good evening, everyone. No, we don't have any updates as of right now. We're still waiting for the ISA to get cleared, but I'm still here present listening to the minutes and whatnot.
I know that there's a Judge Bergen in Pima County that has, I believe, retired or is doing something else. And that person might be willing to talk to us, because they are no longer part of, they were hearing the GEI proceedings and the statutes that, you know, govern our stay here at Ash. And he might be willing to. I don't know if you've tried to reach out to him.
Yeah, I'm still in talks with Judge Welty. So we'll see.
Okay.
How that finalizes. But welcome, Sarah. I hope to that we're able to work together. Like, if we are looking into something and the hospital is looking into something, that you'll be another advocate for the patients, so you can look at anything that we may have an opinion on that's different than the hospital's. Thanks. Mike, you have your hand up?
Hi, everybody. Just really quick. Sarah, that's not entirely true. You did go through our training at the hospital earlier this month. So you're semi onboarded with the facility.
Yes, that is. I completely forgot about that. My bad. But I did. Okay. Yes.
Okay, thanks. And Holly, you have your hand up? You're muted.
Oh, you're on mute, Holly.
Everybody was probably glad. I just wanted to mention, I don't know if in your conversations with Judge Welty, he has told you, but he is stepping down. He is stepping down as the presiding judge, and the new presiding judge will be Judge Pamela Gates. I don't know the exact timing of that, and I don't know if he's going to keep the ASH calendar. I would love for him to, but Judge Gates is wonderful as well. So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. Yeah. And also, if you'd like to have some, there are a few prosecutors, county attorneys, who have most of the patients at ASH, and there are a few defense attorneys who have most of the patients at ASH in terms of their conditional release cases. So we could easily put together, and we all get along for the most part. We work very cooperatively. So we could put together a panel of attorneys. three, you know, two or three from each side.
Okay. I think the issue was when I called and left messages with his assistant, and I left, he called me back and I was at a busy function at the Biltmore, and it was hard to hear even though I kept walking further and further away. I think he was under the impression that we were working for the hospital, so he wanted Aaron Cohen to do it. Right. And I said, and I talked to Mike about it, and like you said, that's not appropriate. So then they asked me to put a full information sheet and a letter together about what the IOC is, and I put links to our, what the statutes are and who we are and our website and our last two annual reports. So he has all the information. I'm just waiting for him to get back to me.
And great. That's a great idea. We can also send an email and say that some of the prosecutors and the defense attorneys and say, please do this. We'd love to have it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. So ADOA training, we know we all have to do training. You're going to send out the remaining new updated links. Updates from other IOC. Holly, do you have anything from your IOC?
We have had a very interesting case presented last night that is going forward on a referral on two behavioral health residential facilities that were awful and had very sick members. Additionally, there is a proposal circulating for to revise the portions of the Arizona Administrative Code that relate to the IOCs. And it would vastly change the membership. It would take away training by the Department of Administration, which I think would be awful. It's a rule change. ASH is not specifically included, but if the rule was changed as to, it's not explicitly excluded either. So that's kind of, it's a quandary. We're trying to find out who is wanting this. And it's interesting because, of course, the IOCs exist through statutes. ASH is a specific statute, and the others exist in two different statutes. So a rule change that is inconsistent with the statutes would be very perplexing, and we'd have to wait then to see the statutes change. So I'm a little concerned about it because I think our IOCs are functioning well and are creative and innovative, and I hate to see us tinkering with either the rules or the statutes or both, because sometimes the enemy of good is better, and we could end up with a whole new thing in what might even be an election year, which could be dicey.
Is it access that's changing the rules, or is it?
Nobody owns up yet. Did I not copy you on it? That's my bad. I'll send it to you and you can send it out to your committee. I got it through some contacts in Yavapai County. I hadn't even seen it. So we just have to start digging in and trying to find out.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.
That's interesting. Review of action items. One, again, we're still communicating with the mental health judge. The advocate, Sarah, is on, and we're anxious for her to get involved and advocate as well for the patients. And from what I've seen, Larry, it's almost like Sarah is going to work closely with the IOC, but I really would like her to look at those situations that we feel strongly about, and we can't come to an agreement on corrective action, or, you know, we say our opinion, administration says their opinion, and then it kind of stops there. It doesn't happen often, but
maybe we should set up a call with me, you, and Sarah to and even Tim, maybe to go through some of those pain points and just kind of break down that silo a little bit and figure out the best way to approach that. So
okay,
that might be something we want to do.
Okay. Other things we had, staffing concerns, and that's in regard to patio time. I think in the last month, we have heard from patients that at times they're not allowed out on the patio because there needs to be, you know, two people out on the patio, two people back in the unit, and sometimes that gets in the way. Kay, is that getting better?
Yes, we've been consistently getting at least three staff now. We've been at times down to two. Patio time is still kind of sporadic, but for the most part, it is getting better. I think that they're just having problems getting staff members. What's the word I'm looking for? The techs that are on call or whatever to come in and like Concentra to come in on the weekends. And that's primarily the biggest issue for us is the weekends.
Registry staff. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm glad that's improving. Mike, do you have any, is there any hiring campaign to try to hire more permanent staff, or are you still constrained by budget, or are you just not getting the applicants?
A little bit of all of the above. So, you know, our budget is what it is, but there's also just a very, I don't even know the right word to use right now, so I apologize. The word's escaping my mind. Just workforce issues. The people don't exist in the numbers to meet the demand for the entire healthcare industry. So we're up against every other hospital in the state or in the region when it comes to trying to get the same talent. But yeah, we're doing what we can as best as we can.
You know, one thing to think about, and I don't know if you target them. I was really surprised when I was in Louisiana at their secure residential, and they had maybe 80 people in there. They had a woman's wing and a man's wing. And the key, he said, to hiring people and keeping people is he hired from assisted living. And he said, after working in assisted living with older patients with a lot of issues, some had SMI, some had dementia, and others, they seemed really equipped, and nothing kind of threw them off their game. So he had that was his biggest hiring pool.
Let me talk to HR about that. See if they have any ideas. That's a really good idea.
Holly, you're on mute.
Thank you. I'm not going to jump in repeatedly, but of all the needs that my clients have, and the thing that they ask about, almost plead for, it's more patio time or more time to go out and walk early in the morning before the groups are out there, or in the evening. And what I had a patient in tears because the patient said, it's going to be 90 degrees and pretty soon it's going to be 105. And I can't spend another 4 months here with just sitting in the day room all day. I felt so sorry for this person. And it occurred to me, maybe could you get interns, psych interns, nursing students, med students? They're all looking for rotations, particularly the osteopathic students. Just somebody who can do something as simple as walk on the mall early morning or evening. I just feel so bad for these patients who just don't get that outdoor time.
Mm-hmm. It's especially difficult on certain units that don't have patios. Like we really feel, you know, confined onto the unit. So it would be nice if we could maybe, like Holly was saying, get some time, like maybe between 5 and 7 a.m. or between 3 and 5 p.m. where it doesn't interfere with our breakfast or our meals, and and then just have like security out on the mall watching us walk or whatever. That would be really helpful.
I hope they can consider that. Jane, you have your hand up?
Yeah, Holly, thank you for sharing that kind of angst, because I know I feel a similar thing. If I don't get out this time of year, get really depressed because I know summer's coming and it's such an important part of mental health. What kinds of certifications would be required? Could people like, could NAMI volunteers volunteer for this kind of service?
Great.
I'll let Mike answer, but I doubt that a volunteer organization would be left alone with patients.
Yeah, that's correct. And to answer the other part about students, we are attempting to beef up our rotations at the hospital with more students, especially with more nursing students, and trying to get some schools on board to place nursing students who are in their final year with us for an extended externship, 12 weeks, approximately, something like that, so they can get more exposure into inpatient psychiatric care. So that may be an option at some point in the future. I don't have a date on when that will possibly go into place at this point, but we are looking at options outside of just direct employees as well.
That's great. Jane, you can have another, and then Janina.
Okay, it's a follow-up question. Mike, what kind of certification then is required for this level of staff?
So it's not so much the certification, Jane, it's more of the training that they receive. So we want to make sure that these individuals are trained and certified in nonviolent crisis intervention, so that, you know, worst case scenario, if something were to happen, if a patient were to begin to kind of amp up or rile up, that they would know how to respond to that case. Potentially, you know, worst case scenario would be having to go hands-on with a patient. So that's why that's where this gets sticky. A lot of times schools, they don't want their students to do that. Volunteers, as Lori pointed out before, that's a huge issue as well, just from the state's perspective of liability when it comes down to those kind of things. So it very much is.
And a follow-up to that, are there any type of retired nurses associations or retired physician assistants associations that might be a source of volunteerism for the state hospital?
So that I don't have an answer to. I don't know about any of those organizations.
Okay. That's a good thought.
I'm going to Google right now while Janita's.
Okay.
So Mike, I know that you probably explore this this option. I know that ASU is always looking for places and maybe establishing some sort of contract with the nursing program would be great. I know that they have a community rotation and a psych rotation. So Ash would qualify for both of those.
Yeah, Janina, we are basically doing and thinking alike. So right now, the Department of Health Services, not the state hospital, but the Department of Health Services is negotiating an agreement with Arizona State as part of our movement to become an academically, I forget the exact term, I apologize, but it's an academically accredited public health organization. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, the state hospital is being added into that agreement to allow things like this to happen, because ultimately our goal is to become a certified teaching facility, and we're going to need a very strong relationship with an academic organization in order mm-hmm. to do so. So we've already begun using ASU for some placement at the state hospital, specifically for nurse practitioners. And then the next step is to tap into their nursing school and then ultimately look for psychiatric residents in the future once their med school is still.
Yeah, but I think nursing schools would be the best bet for, you know, these kind of activities that Holly mentioned and some other things. I mean, It would be an excellent experience.
Yeah.
They do it already. It's probably been checked maybe 8 to 10 years ago when they took over, was it the old West, is it Westwood Ho with a big antenna on it in downtown Phoenix?
Westwood Ho.
And ASU put in their students along with professors, and they're working with people, I think homeless people with a lot of medical and psychiatric issues. And we were down, we've been down there a couple times, both on the ASU professor side and then also watching them interact. So they already do that type of work. And they do that through, I think it used to be through, they changed the names of the colleges so often. I think it's now under the Watts, which is social work, and then they have the nursing. But I can help if you need help, kind of try to direct to the right group.
Yeah, because they have three campuses, the Phoenix one, east side and west side. So and like, no,
they have more than that, but again, it's just getting it, saying what we need, and then they can pull from different college programs and campuses. I think that's good. Hopefully we can get some relief sooner rather than later, because these are long-term plans. And Jane, you have your hand up again?
Yeah, I want to dig a little bit deeper into the qualifications then of someone that would be appropriate to walk with these patients on the patio for on the weekends for relief. So my concern is when I heard you outline for me what the liability concerns are and concerns about using, for example, a NAMI volunteer, well, young nursing students could also fall into that category, right? They don't have de-escalation training. They don't have the physical ability to tackle someone if that was required. So I guess in absence of any written standard for what is the requirement for this role, how can we appropriately go about targeting an affinity-based group to recruit for this activity? And I guess, could we get a standard? Could we get a written standard of what's required?
I mean, it would just be the job description for a behavioral health technician. Everything is in there as far as what they require for training and education. And
so it has to, does it have
oh yeah, it's not, we're not just making this up. It's well documented in the records. So yeah, it's all in there with all and their ongoing training and whatnot. So they get recertified every year in this as well. So it's not like a one-off thing.
Okay, so it has to be a behavioral health tech or equivalent.
Yes.
And I think they'd have to be part of a group that the state knows is coming in, and we'll get to that later when we get to pet therapy.
And is covered with liability insurance.
Yeah. And they're on the approved, I don't know if they'd have to be approved vendor, but any, and Larry, you sent me this, the registered to be a state vendor, anyone that's going to do business, even if it's volunteer business, has to be vetted through this process.
Correct. Yeah, they have to register through the state, through our procurement department to get a vendor ID.
I think an easier solution would be if we could get some combination of tech and security guard officers to kind of come up with a number like the 1-to-5 ratio and get those people out on the mall. I think that we would be able to make the number of people to watch the patients that want to go outside. I think anyway.
Okay. Alice, you had your hand up. The insurance was exactly what I was thinking. Okay. Was that your comment, Alice, that it was the insurance aspect?
Yeah, because, you know, one aspect, because behavioral health in these settings is so different, and it can be tenuous when it comes to using CPI skills and stuff. I would wonder what the insurance companies would require, you know, in order to say, okay, I would cover that incident. You know what I mean? That would be a part of it for sure. That's all.
Janina?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to have my hands up.
Okay, that's okay. So this goes right into pet therapy, and we've been talking about that since the last dog died, Rosie, or can't remember the name. Sharla. Okay. They have not had another dog or another group. There is a proposed dog that's been trained, and someone that wants to bring the dog in. I asked Larry, and Larry provided the link for them to register to be a state vendor, because just because a dog has training, has certificates, I can have a dog that's a service dog. Doesn't mean I can go to a hospital, even if they're allowed to go into other community places or even visit hospice facilities. I think the government agencies require this vetting process for their vendors. So hopefully they'll be able to do that. Holly?
Was Joseph Kalter emailed the registration for the ADOA to be a vendor? Was he given that link? Because I think at this point they've hit a lot of roadblocks, and I'm not quite sure where they're coming from. So I guess if there is a way to register as a state vendor, did Joseph Kalter get a copy of that?
Yes, I called Larry about a week ago and asked him to look into it. Larry copied Joseph, and he copied me, and I forwarded it to the IOC members, and I forwarded it to you, Kay, also. So there is a link to do this. And Holly?
Okay. And then I have another question really quick. If Joseph Kalter needed this registration, why wasn't he given direction to do so? Because I feel that like it shouldn't have had to be escalated to the point of the IOC. I know that Joseph Kalter has made numerous attempts through the hospital to get Foxy on the campus, and they've been responded with almost next to nothing. Like I've seen some of the responses, and it's actually it's bothersome to me how some of the staff have reacted to simple questions.
Yeah. I don't know whether they didn't know, you know, that's why when I became aware of it, I reached out to Larry and I said, what's the process? So tell them what the process is. They can then follow the process and be told, yes, you're approved, or no, you're not, but at least they'll get, you know, get an answer. And if not this dog, can another dog, another company start pet therapy for the hospital again? Holly? You're on mute.
The conversation got going quickly. I have to publicly declare a conflict of interest regarding this, because one of the patients involved is a client of mine. So consistent with the rules that apply to the IOC, I'm declaring that I have a conflict of interest in discussing the pet therapy as it relates to this particular animal. So thank you.
Thank you. Now, Larry, does Holly need to send that in writing?
She's fine. She's an ad hoc member of the committee, okay. So she stated it for the record. So I think we're good.
Okay. Thank you.
So Larry,
okay.
Let me understand the process just for my own edification. So they need to register with the ADOA to be an approved vendor. Once that's happened, then who will forward that information over to the Arizona State Hospital?
So I'll answer that, Larry. So the way procurement works in the state is in order to work with or for a state agency, you have to register as an approved vendor, which we're just speaking about right now. After you complete that process, that you will be notified. If you're registered as a vendor, you will be notified if a state agency or a state entity solicits for a service that you are registered and approved to provide. And then in that case, when that happens, as a vendor, you are allowed to respond to that solicitation and enter into contract negotiations with the agency or the entity to determine if you do meet the specs that the agency is trying to accomplish.
But I know that the service that they're providing is for free. It's on a volunteer basis. So do they still have to go to the approved vendor program? Because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like if you're a vendor, they still need to,
in this case, or in any case, and I think it was Lori who said the magic word, and that's insurance. Because we do want to make sure that, you know, if something were to happen, and not that this ever would, but let's say the dog were to bite a patient, they're going to be liable for that. So we want to make sure that all bases are covered. So that's why it's required, Kay.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. And so that has to be done through the ADOA. And once it's approved through the ADOA, then Ash can select from that vendor. And if that person winds up being the only vendor available, then will that person or that dog be selected? Or that, well, I guess it should be a pet partner team.
Yeah, we would not like enter into an agreement for a specific animal. It'd be with the vendor group. And then we would make a determination if they're if they're able to provide the services that we need.
Okay. And then I just have a basic question. I don't really understand why I got risen to the point of the IOC. I know that this person has emailed, I believe the head of rehab and why wasn't this person, they didn't get any response. Like, I'm just kind of curious, because if there was a method in place, why wasn't that forwarded to Joseph Calzert?
Well, I think, and I might be wrong, but I think whenever the hospital is in litigation with a patient over that specific topic, maybe they're not, they don't communicate. I don't know whether that had anything to do with when it was brought up to me, I'm like, are they even able to provide services to any state agency? Are they on the approved list? And that's when I reached out to Larry. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
They're not currently in litigation over this matter. This is over a therapy dog. They're in litigation over a service animal, which is a very different thing. A service animal violates the ADA. There's a patient that requires dog assistance, such that he needs that dog to reside with him. This is a therapy animal, which would service the whole hospital, except for the civil campus. It would be for all the forensic patients. So it's not the same thing. So I don't know. I'm still kind of confused as to why there was no response given, I guess.
I don't know, but I don't think we can talk about a specific patient with that specific issue going on, but at least now they have the process. So hopefully that guy that owns the agency or the company will fill it out and follow the process. Better late than never.
As long as that person has received that information, then I'm okay with that. Thank you so much.
They did. I was copied on the email that was sent to him from Larry. And when I got it, then I sent it to the rest of the committee.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. The next point also, Melissa and I visited the forensic campus to look at ways as an architect. Melissa has amazing designs and thoughts on how to design buildings that are more friendly to people potentially on the spectrum or special needs. And she came out to look at some maybe low-hanging fruit that could be done at inexpensive cost. So the day that Melissa and I went, we actually visited one of the units, and I don't even know which one it was. That's how much I know about the names of the units. But when we were in there, and then I'll have Melissa talk to you about design and what her thoughts were. But when we went into the day room, the patio door was open and there was staff situated to watch the day room and everyone out on the patio playing. I think they were playing basketball or maybe badminton or something. They were out. Most of the patients were out there. There were some in the day room and all the lights were off or on low. Only the emergency lights were on and the day room natural light was coming in. It was a little loud when we got there because someone had the TV blasting, but they saw we were talking and they lowered the TV. But I don't know if that's representative of all the forensic units because we only went on that one. I've been on a few others, but that day the door was open and people were coming in and out. Melissa, do you want to give your thoughts about what you saw and things that you think might be possible? And we're not holding you, we're not holding you to anything, but just your thoughts about what we saw.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Lori. Yeah, because I'm still in the process of reviewing too, yeah. But we looked at, you know, looking at like broad categories of like, right, lighting, acoustics, the colors, the materials and the furnishings and the decorations. And then there is more, I'll say, operational or therapeutic things that the hospital would specifically do that address like different sensory things, right? Like whether or not there were weighted blankets being used or if there were certain sensory objects that, you know, could help. And as Lori said, we looked, we don't know if that was, you know, unusual day or not. You know, you look for other things such as accessibility, clear light layout, that it's not cluttered, you know, didn't see any of that, but, you know, I am looking at, I received a lot of the plans so that I can look more closely at the type of lighting that's currently being used, you know, very specifically, see if there's anything that we could do there, as Lori said, you know, if there's anything that's sort of easy to do, are there any spaces that we could maybe do some kind of intervention, whether it's, you know, putting in another wall or space within the space. And again, I'm just, you know, looking at the drawings and seeing if there are any other opportunities now that we've visited the space.
I have some insight into that because I live on, I've lived on at least three of the units and the reverberation is pretty loud. It's from the concrete walls and things. And then the yeah. TVs are pretty loud. And then I think with the units being so full, because when I first got here, there were about 13 to 14 patients per unit and we're almost at capacity at 20 patients per unit. So I think it's the combination of just being a completely full unit as well as the concrete walls and the blaring TV that never shuts off. I can understand how that could be difficult for somebody with autism to struggle. The only suggestion that I can make, I've taken a little bit of acoustical physics, is that if they can put some kind of rugs or carpeting on the walls to kind of lower the reverberation off the concrete walls, that would help absorb some of the sound energy. I don't know. Other than that, other than turning down the TV, but with 20 people on the units now, it's very difficult with, you know, a bunch of mini conversations going on as well as people trying to listen to the TV. So they crank up the TV volume. And then on certain units, there's no patio, so there's not even a way to dissipate some of the sound, you know, mm-hmm. out the door. So it's just difficult. Other than putting up rugs or some kind of carpeting on the wall, I really don't know how. You can also get baffles, but they're kind of more expensive, that could baffle out some of the sound. The triangular shaped cones that they use in anechoic chambers that help as well. But I would think that the patients might kick at those. I'm not sure. It's kind of a foam like material. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't even know if within the hospital budget yeah. to do something like this, but that would help.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. Looking at that. Yeah, that's super helpful, Kay. And there are less expensive ways to do that too with things like felt. And actually, because the ceiling heights are the way that they are, they're so high, there are opportunities there. So I appreciate that feedback.
Yeah. Melissa was looking up because you can hang kind of sound baffling things, but you have to hang them to where they don't interfere with the sprinkler system or, and they can't interfere with line of sight or any of these things. So that's why she has the drawings and she'll be able to come up. The other thing is if you have things on the wall, it's hard to clean and keep sanitary if they're foamy or some material. So that's why Melissa's perfect.
In absence of doing that, I think that noise canceling headphones would be appropriate. I took a look at the Walking Horse ones, and those are basically all audio headphones. And I don't think that that's quite the level of cancellation that's probably needed. But I'm not an autism spectrum disorder expert. I have no idea. But I know that that's what's been requested.
Well, we're anxious to see what Melissa's recommendations are. Holly?
Thank you, Melissa. That's wonderful. And thank you all for everybody for looking at this and for Michael Sheldon. Mike, thank you for letting them explore this. It is important. I think the thing that I hear the most, I was on several units today, and what I didn't realize on Cottonwood, for instance, is that there is no quiet room. There isn't a room that you can go one, two, three, a small number of patients. And if you don't want to watch TV and you don't want to be in the den of noise in the day room, and that's a cool place in terms of people being able to talk and sit. There were patients doing crafts today, but there wasn't a quiet room there. I thought all the units had a quiet room, but I was wrong. So I think that not just for patients with a spectrum disorder or neurocognitive issues, I can't imagine not being able to get, and sometimes the dorms are closed, so the patients can't go to their rooms, as I understand it. So I can't imagine being in the day room with the TV on, with patients doing their thing, staff doing their thing, and nowhere to go except there, and no quiet room. So that's my, hopefully, if we could just get a quiet room, that would be, I think, huge.
Yeah, I wonder, again, you know, we're looking for things that don't require money allocation and construction because we don't know if it would be approved, but whatever Melissa recommends, and if one unit doesn't have a quiet space, I don't know how easy, and Melissa, maybe they can identify the building if you can see, would that be even possible? You know, again, I don't know. One thing we also talked about when we were in there, and as she's designing and remodeling other places, the sounds of the doors, they're heavy and they lock, you know, hearing that. But again, they have to have the heavy doors that do lock. And I think Melissa also mentioned some buildings have that air that comes on and it's very noisy. We didn't experience that the day we were there, so I'm not sure if that's also part of the noise pollution. I know all hospitals are noisy, but when you live there, it's even worse, right? As far as not being able to escape. So we are excited.
I have another question. I would like to go back to the pet therapy. I was wondering, I know Starla and her handler, and I don't know, I can't remember her name, came to the hospital as a pet partner team and not part of a company. Would it be easier for Joseph Kalsert to register with Ash as a volunteer with Foxy, as opposed to being part of a company, if he did that on his personal accord, like as a pet partner team?
I'm not able to respond to that.
Let's see if they get through the approved vendor list.
I believe that Joseph Tauscher is not interested in doing that because he is not representing a business. He's responding as a pet partner team, much like Starla and her handler. So I can you tell me how they need to register in that light?
At this point, I'm not going to speak on this subject any longer.
I mean, we can ask Larry, but I think in the situation with the patient and the dog and the person and the hospital being in, I thought they were in litigation, potential litigation. I think it's limited if he can respond. I just gave the avenue that Larry gave me for the person to register if he wants to bring the dog in and have pet therapy for all the patients that want it.
Mike, I don't mean to be rude, but under ARS 41-3803 subsection K, you're supposed to answer.
No.
It says the superintendent and the chief medical officer or their designee shall give a report to and respond to questions from the independent oversight committee members. That's in our ARS 41-3803 subsection K.
Well, Mike, if you want to respond later after the meeting, I don't know whether you have to talk to your team or whatever, then I can send it out to the IOC.
Okay.
So do we need to do a motion to ask Ash to tell us how to register a pet partner team?
I would think so.
Okay. I'd like to put a motion in to ask Ash how to register a pet partner team as a private person and a private dog, I guess a private dog, I don't know, how to register with Ash to do such thing.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion passes. Okay, next we're at Ash admin update.
I don't think I have anything to update the group on. The last time we met, I mentioned that we did officially name Dr. Kuo as our CMO, and that was the biggest thing that's happened recently for us, admin-wise.
With that, okay, so he will leave his psychiatry position open. Are you hiring more psychiatrists, or are you going to hire nurse practitioners, or are you hiring psychologists? How many psychiatrists do we have?
So right now we have, we do have that position that Dr. Kuo just vacated. His psychiatrist position is posted for recruitment. So it is our intention to find another psychiatrist to add to the mix. Dr. Kuo will still carry a minimal caseload to assist the rest of the providers with the workload. And we are also looking to bring on a part-time pool psychiatrist that will help with some coverage as well. So we're trying to do what we can with what we have available right now.
Okay. Now, so will the forensic patients also have a psychiatrist, or will they only be treated with nurse practitioners?
No, when we make this move, there will be three psychiatrists on forensics and one or at least two, but maybe three nurse practitioners as well. And then as well as our psychology complement available too. And in a couple forensic units, the psychologists are actually the training team leaders.
Okay. Well, thank you. Jane, do you have a question?
No.
Okay, you may want to mute. Okay, thank you. I did visit the patient forums, one on civil, and then Chuck and I and Kay were on forensic. We'll go to that first, and then we'll go to incident and accident reports. So I'll report on civil since I was the only one from the IOC there. For civil, the old business, again, and they had a pretty good turnout of patients. The patients want to have more, they want to have purchasing available on the units instead of having to go off the mall, on the mall or to the cafe. So they were talking about that. They want more food choices at the cafe. They want more purchase options for merchandise. And they're questioning why some items on Walking Horse are not permitted. So I think sometimes they're confused. If it's on the catalog, why can't they have it? It's on the catalog, but it's still contraband. They want more downtime in their room. They said there is not enough time to integrate and reflect on all the group and therapy they're getting. And a particular patient said they really want more downtime to process. The hospital wants the patients active in treatment during the day, so they don't want them in the room. But that was a comment. The concerning thing to me, and Tara was there, as was other administration, one patient was talking about the bullying and being afraid and can't say no, and they were buying protection. It broke my heart. The person was breaking down, and I was asking, well, have you reported this? And he didn't. So he didn't tell the staff. He didn't tell the nursing. He didn't tell the team. And we talked about, you know, having to be, you're in the hospital, you're surrounded by a team. This is a perfect place to be taught how to learn to set boundaries and learn how to be protected. I know after that, when asked, why aren't you telling anyone? I was afraid for retaliation from the patient bullying him, bullying the patient. The patient was too afraid to tell staff. They were unaware. The staff was unaware of the situation. The person was very scared. And we emphasized that you have to report these things. After the fact, I followed up, and I know that they did move the person to another unit. And we just have to emphasize, and Tara, I hope you can help, that when patients feel unsafe, they do need to say something. And if someone's taking their money, this is the same patient that makes sense now in hindsight that wanted to not go on the mall or go to the cafe to buy food because then they were being kind of pressured to giving their food, giving their money away. And they wanted instead to have it brought to the unit in their room. Of course, they want to leave food in the room. So it's a whole, it just spirals out of control. But hopefully the patient will find peace now. And I hope the techs and nursing staff can look out for this. Tara, you have your hand raised.
So I wanted to let you know, after we left the meeting, the patient form, we sat down with the patient, both patients, and I actually went to the bank to see the patient that was being accused. We were able to decipher what was going on, as well as both patients, where they're at in their care. The patient who had made those statements had been doing trade with a couple of his peers. He also, at that same time, was having some problems with his delusion. So we were able to get a lot of those things solved. But to piggyback off of something Mike says, he is recruiting. And fortunately, right now, something good did happen on that unit. Mike was able to recruit a staff member from registry, and that staff member from registry within 90 days, less than 90 days, he's now in the lead, and he's watching all those patients on that unit. So, and he's doing due diligence with them. And so that was very good. He was able to, for 4 days, watch what was going on, the patterns that were stated, and then he was able to call me. And so we got this resolved, and we're trying to make sure the patient understands not to share, because we don't want the patients to feel taken advantage of if it comes a day where they don't have the money to pay back what they loaned. So I just wanted to let you know, we took it very serious. As soon as we left the meeting that day before going to the forensic patient form, we was able to resolve this.
Yeah. So I'm glad, because that was hard for me to hear in that room. Holly?
I just wanted to say thank you, first of all. And second, I have, you know, clients at ASH, I have clients in jail, clients in prison. Patients feel safe if they think they can trust the staff, because their only buffer from other patients who exploit or abuse or assault are the staff. And so the way you get patients to report is to instill that their reports are taken seriously and they will be protected. So the fact that this happened as quickly as it did and the other patient was moved will send a very powerful message, unless and until the same thing happens and is ignored. So it's a constant battle to protect the most vulnerable, whether it's folks in prison, fish as they're called, or whether it's a hospital or the workplace, you know? Thank you for doing that.
I think it's one thing, it's pretty easy to identify the ones that are more victims and the ones that aren't going to fight. So I think if the patients can see it, the staff should be able to see it too.
Should be.
Yeah. They talked about, again, wanting to have everything brought to them. And I think this is all to avoid their peers seeing them have money. And they were told that no food in the room because it's problematic. The patients also, and this is consistent with both the civil and forensic, they added something unusual, but they don't want to be penalized for someone that misbehaves. You know, if one person on the unit's misbehaving, then they all lose a privilege, and they really don't want that. Even on the civil side, they say they want individualized treatment plans. They do not want to be held back for some of the people that do not behave. They want a fairer system. They came up with this. They want a system to identify the patients that are self-harmers. And they came up with this code. A green band or green whatever is good. No self-harm. You can trust them with a pen. Yellow equals caution. Shouldn't be trusted. And red is beware. Watch them. This way they could gain some privileges. They could develop a better system for full grounds for even staff that's watching them that may not be familiar or registry staff. I thought it was quite creative.
Clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said, almost like a trustee status, this patient's behaving, this patient's following their treatment, we know this patient behaves, and let it be known. So that was unusual. They want real pens and they want dice. They want, they talked about medications. Another patient are causing drowsiness and problems with their GI tract and sleep apnea. So they, I think we told them, or Tara told them, talk to your treatment teams if you feel like you're too drowsy and they can look. Then another patient that is a recent, I think a new patient, was just telling the other patients, ASH is better than Desert Vista or the Sonoran hospitals, because I think they had been frequent flyers over there. And then other patients, again, I'm trying to take notes from everyone. Another unit, they talked about the presence of helicopters all the time. And at first I thought they meant helicopters with Desert Vista with the helipad right behind, a Maricopa County right behind them. But then it went into, they also have presidents seen on the unit. So I'm not sure if that was real or delusion. They also want a mixer program, and they want peer support programs started. And another thing that I thought was really insightful, of some new patients coming and some patients that have been there a while. They wanted to set up a patient arrival peer to help a new patient during the arrival and transition period that tries to show them the lay of the land. And of course, they'd want that patient to be someone that's on a good behavior or trustee status. And the last one was evidence of miracles, and we had a patient read us two poems. So that was a civil form, but it was pretty well attended and a lot of information. Now, Kay, so I don't have to listen to myself, can you report on the forensic form?
Let me, I have the notes here. So the first thing that we talked about some of the old business, mm-hmm. and some of that was the patient pay work program, the allocations. People who work on Mondays fall on holidays with no pay, and medical appointments have no pay. Risk assessments. This is some of the stuff. This is the old business. Risk assessments started December 2nd. They're back online. The hospital exercise equipment is broken. I don't think that there's still a date to fix any of that. The water stations were not available on the mall, but they are now, so that's fine. And then they wanted visits with more than two people, and that was denied. Let's see. Policy books. So the new business is that the policy books are now available on the unit and books at the nurse's station. Another unit asked about the work hours again, and they said that they're working on it to try and revamp the program. They're expecting that the work hours come back on potentially July 1st. Educational access and vocational training was another concern that my patient brought up. The media player, the Windows media player is offline on one specific unit. I think they're off on all the units, actually. The other thing is the blanketed policies on the virtual visits. So the blanketed policy was that a staff member must be in the room when the virtual visit is occurring. And so patients were kind of upset because I believe there was only one patient that violated the rules to the virtual visits, but then all of us got blanketed, a blanketed policy. Another unit asked that we do popcorn on rotation because sometimes the last unit to go on popcorn gets the least amount of selection. They also wanted to know about FlexiPens, like if I think this one was that the FlexiPen quality was low. You can't actually write them, especially with the black ink. Another unit said that the paper towels and toilet paper rolls have been thrown out after about a half a roll. Let's see. And I think that's about everything that I have written down. Do you have anything else written down, Lori?
Yeah, I think with the work, what happened is with the budget cuts, they had X amount of money to spend, and this makes sense, but I didn't know that the patients aren't told if they have a medical appointment until like right before the appointment for safety concerns if they're going off the campus. So what we came up with during the meeting is that the scheduler who's scheduling the appointments could have a list of everyone's work times so they could know not to schedule them during the time they're working, because if they miss that work, then they can't work the rest of the week. So hopefully that's happening. They're going to give the scheduler the work schedule to try to avoid conflicts.
I don't believe that that's happening.
Okay.
We can ask Mike though. Mike, do you know, is the scheduler who schedules our medical appointments and stuff been given notice of our work schedule?
I do not know the answer to that question. Okay. Give me like 24 hours. I'll figure out if they've been given that information.
All right, great. Thank you.
And I think about the flex pens, they said that in their experience, the ones that you're ordering right now, aren't as good as the ones they used to have, and that the blue ink lasts longer than the black ink. So if you're going to order flex pens, order blue ink. Let's see. The others that they talked about was that the trash cans also should be cleaned because the trash cans are gross. The hallway lights are constantly on, but then I had a note, the halls are dark. So I don't understand what that note meant. Maybe
I remember what happened with that one. I think that when the surveillance cameras were put in on a specific unit, that wound up making all of the emergency lights even off. So they had the hall lights on all the way on full blast. So I think that they fixed that, but I'm not sure.
Okay. And the other thing, Tara, we'll see about the new work program again, should be restored July 1st. There was a comment that they can't order religious items, which is unusual. And then they would like to see the grievance investigation roadmap. They just want to see what's the life and the day of a grievance. How does it become? When do you investigate it? How it becomes a complaint? How it's closed? They just want to see the whole roadmap. So hopefully they'll get that.
That should be on the units posted. We made, I don't know. Yeah, we made something like that for every unit. It's been posted for at least a few months at this point.
Yeah. This was just maybe, 2 weeks ago? It was February 21st. Because I know it was my birthday, so I spent hours at Ash. So they also need women's hygiene products. I didn't think that was an issue. Okay, I'm not sure if you know what specific issue they're facing.
I don't know. I know what issues. So the hospital provides pads for women, but not tampons. And so, like, if you want tampons, you have to purchase them yourself.
Okay.
Why would that be, Ken or Michael? Why would the hospital not provide tampons?
I don't know. It could be for safety concerns.
If it was a safety concern, then they wouldn't let them buy in personal.
They wouldn't let them do what?
They wouldn't let them buy it. Kay is saying that she can buy tampons. Out of her own
name. But they're not provided through the hospital.
It could be our state approved vendor does not offer them.
I would suggest we find another vendor, and that's pretty egregious as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not even a woman.
Okay, the other thing that was suggested, one of the patients asked if they could get a handheld vacuum because they think that the vacuums and the mops are not getting between the mats in the gym, and they think there's a lot of dirt and sweat and germs accumulated, and they'd like a little handheld so they could clean better. So that's a request. So, Jane?
Yeah, I think I'd like to make a motion that we ask the state hospital to start providing tampons for women patients.
I will second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay. So that's it. And that's all I had for the civil and the forensic. And let me see. I pulled the assault perpetrators. And again, we have one patient that is, they have 8 assaults. The next one has 3, and then it drops down to a couple with 3 or 2 and then 1. So again, couple of patients that are contributing to most of the assaults. I did notice that the number of assaults in the assault report, or the number of incidents in general, seem to be down. And I'm not sure if that's a result of there's a team that's working on on reducing assaults, reducing aggression. So maybe that's what's contributing to it. Let's see. Now looking,
Lori, was that on civil or forensics that that one person is causing the assaults?
Or can I can't tell. I just have a. I just have a number. I would assume it was civil, but I could be wrong. You know, I don't know. Typically, we get more civil incident reports. Let me look to see what I pulled. The first one is Ash 2025-0485, and this was self-abuse, self-inflicted injury, and the patient was expressing suicidal ideation, and they were on, they wanted a one-to-one, and they were verbalizing that they didn't want a code. But then the behaviors escalated and they began slamming doors, swallowing things, and wrapping cords of headphones around the person's neck, and then requiring a razor and mildly, and they didn't get the razor. I think that was a bite, leaving no mark. But they were then put on COS, LOS 101 for safety and remain on units. And they educated the person on the orders and parameters, and they verbalized that they understood. If they have a radio and headphones, if they have self-harming behaviors, would the headsets have a cord, or would they be forced to do wireless, or can they do wireless in the hospital?
I do not believe they can do wireless, but I could be wrong about that. And if this individual was exhibiting self-harming behavior, then we most likely would take away the headphones if they were wired as a safety precaution, unless this person is on a one-to-one. In that case, we would be more confident that they could have it and our staff would be able to intervene quickly.
Okay. The next one was Ash 2025-0539. And this one was something significant. This seems like it happened off site because an officer received a call, so an LPN from a Sandbridge post-acute regarding a patient becoming aggressive toward the nurse and punching the nurse, and a CNA trying to help, and they were also assaulted. I think it was, from what I can read, it looks like it was an ASH patient at a subacute for a medical condition, because then the person was trying to remove a feeding tube and causing lots of havoc at that unit, throwing themselves to the floor, striking the bed frame, trying to break a GPS cord. I would assume GPS cord would mean like an ankle monitor, but I'm not sure that's used to charge the device.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Okay. And the nurse from, or the LPN from that unit, Sandbridge Post-Acute, was concerned that the behaviors are DTO, DTS. Again, reminded that anytime assaults, they reminded them that they can call the police if they want to call the police and follow the protocol. But I'm unsure why they were calling ASH for help, because typically don't they get a sheet that says, here's this person's behaviors, here's this person's conditions. So yeah. I would think they should have known that.
Yeah, and if the person is over in their facility, then they need to follow their own policies. Yeah. Really quick, Lori, can you give me that number, the IR number in that one again, please?
It was Ash 2025-0539.
Okay.
And in the supervisor review, they concurred that so Mercado's recommendation that they should follow their normal procedure and handling situations or incidents like this that involve patients and that residents reside offsite due to medical conditions, the concern should be handled by the offsite, the staff at the offsite. I just wanted to make sure that they're provided enough information to know if the patient tends to be DTS, DTO. And if they are, would they put them in those restraint things? The TD, I don't know what they're called.
But. The transport safety, the TSDs. I just pulled up this IR, and this is actually an individual at a nursing facility right now. So that's what, so they, nursing homes have different rules. I'm not 100% familiar with all of them, but I know they have much different rules when it comes to like restraining patients and whatnot that they have to follow. So that could have been also the issue at play.
So it's an ASH patient that had a medical problem, procedure, surgery that had to go to a step down.
Cool.
Or, okay. I just thought it was unusual them calling ASH to write an incident. Okay, this one is ASH 2025-0552, and it's a patient fall. The patient fell after coming out of the shower, and the patient stayed on the floor with eyes closed. They did vitals. This is at 8:23. A code cart was present. The patient was responding to verbal commands, but eyes remained closed. They notified and the ambulance arrived and the patient was taken to Valleywise for evaluation with the TSDs and they were accompanied by security and BHT. You would think that if they were lying with their eyes off, they would be pretty not likely to, but again, you guys know better and know the patient history. I was surprised that they had the TSDs on when they were, what looked like they were in a compromised state. Let's see.
Really quick, Lori, before you go to the next incident and accident report, I do need to go back to follow up for previous ongoing discussions for a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay to do right now, or do you want to do finish the IRs and accident reports?
Well, I could use a break from me, so go ahead.
Mike, really quick, there was a patient that was getting reimbursement checks and Ash was cashing them. I did get the paperwork from you that showed that upon intake, there's paperwork that signed that said that if we get any reimbursement checks from insurance, that Ash has the right to them. Was there any way possible to get that signed letter sent over to that patient so that patient understands what's going on?
My understanding on that was we did give the patient, the social work team did sit down with the patient and tell them, explain everything that was going on and show them the documentation.
Great. Okay, yeah, that patient, I don't know, maybe he's not coherent enough to understand it, but yeah, so he's still complaining. So, okay, that's good to know. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
We had asked that they
go. I have a question. Mm-hmm. So is it only insurance money that the hospital can pick up to defray the costs of the patient, or is it any kind of support they get, like, for example, from Social Security or VA benefits, or is it only insurance?
This one was specific to veterans benefits.
It was what?
Veterans.
Veterans, okay. So not insurance.
Yeah, insurance wouldn't, like commercial insurance would not cover.
Okay, thank you.
So I have a question there. Was this veterans benefits that the patient earned because of a disability covered under as a veteran prior to admission to ASH. The reason I ask is I do a little bit of pro bono work over at the VA. I'm not aware that any health insurance available to veterans, like TriWest, for instance, pays for any hospital stay that's court ordered.
I'm not sure what the benefits or the exact line item was, Ms. Giesel. I just know it was a veteran's. I don't know if it's a pension or whatever. I don't know exactly how that works, but that's what I was told by the team, that it's a veteran's.
So my understanding is that ASH came out of pocket for some hospital visits that were outside of ASH, and the veterans office had reimbursed basically that person for those visits when ASH actually paid for them. And so I believe that when he went to cash those checks, ASH was taking them, because that was actually, it was intended to go back to ASH because ASH was the one that actually came out of pocket. I just wanted to make sure that he was aware that he had signed that agreement upon intake. That
makes sense. Because fortunately, TriWest and some of the VA benefits will cover subspecialty or specialty care, even if you're in a hospital. I mean, there's some litigation going on. There's big VA veterans law firm out of Florida that does very good work in this area. So that makes perfect sense. Thank you, Kay. And thank you, Mike, for clarifying.
Well, thank you, Kay, for knowing the background on that.
Yeah.
I've been working with that patient for quite some time now. So I just wanted to make sure that that patient understood what was actually happening.
Great.
We visited with him on numerous occasions, and I had asked if they could really kind of make it very evident, and maybe have a poster so it could remind him or remind the patient if they forget why the hospital's cashing some checks, that they can be prompted to remember why would be helpful. Because I think the patient gets traumatized believing that people are taking their money, mm-hmm. and that's sad. Mm-hmm. So Jane, you have a question or your hand up or a comment?
Sorry, I'm going to withdraw my question with the clarification that we just received on the benefits.
Okay, so we do have a few more. I'll go back to ASH 2025-0595. This was an unusual self-inflicted injury, but a very unusual one. I can't really explain too much without identifying how bizarre it was, but the patient used a nail clipper to really cause some self-harm. In situations like this, now that they have displayed self-harm behaviors, will they now be able to have self-clippers, nail clippers, or anything like that that could potentially be used to self-harm again? Or what do you do in this situation? If this was a patient that never did self-harm in unusual ways, they do need to clip their toenails. I mean,
yeah, correct. So obviously we're going to take the situation, it's a very fluid situation. We're going to take it day by day. So originally we put the individual on a heightened level of observation to make sure that we could ensure their safety. And then, you know, ultimately we will ease this individual back into the higher level of, the lower level of restrictions so that they can use nail clippers. We may make it where they can only use them under sight of our staff for a certain amount of time before we, you know, begin to get more comfortable with this individual. So eventually they will be able to earn those privileges back as long as we don't have, you know, concerns about their well-being.
Okay. And the last one is ASH 2025-0637. And this one, was unusual because I know it's part of the program. So it's always, we've heard from patients before that to progress, they need to go through resolution group. And some patients either were psychotic during the time and really don't remember, but have to try to remember so they can progress. This one said that the patient was now rehabbing anxiety after having to go through resolution group. And because of that, then was having self-harm thoughts. And they did something really awful again to themselves. So, I mean, I know you're not the a psychiatrist, but how do you balance that? If you see someone that's so emotionally re-triggered that they do something that's really quite bizarre, and how do you make them go back and continue to visit that incident, or is it one and done and now they can move on?
Well, I mean, I think I can't really speak to our clinical programs to that degree. I'm not, like you said, a psychiatrist or a psychologist. But I know that we're going to, in a situation like this, obviously we're going to work with the patient to, we don't want to force this on them. We want to make sure that they're easing into their recovery. And that they understand that there's a purpose for what we're trying to accomplish, to help them out, to help them progress. We want them to be comfortable, obviously. Like I said, we're not going to force anything on these individuals, and really kind of meet them where they are. So if they're, like, the fact that this individual was in resolution group or getting ready to begin resolution group shows that, you know, he or she is moving on the correct path. And just making sure that the patient knows that when they're ready to resume that path, we'll be right there to do our best to get them on board as well. But that may be a question that you may want to direct towards Dr. Quo. He could answer it better than I can.
Yeah, man. I just wanted to add exactly what Mike was saying, but that we do pre-screen folks that go, and so not everybody that applies or is referred to resolution group are enrolled just for that purpose, but you do get some folks with kind of unrealized kind of trauma that kind of bubbles up, and sometimes they do have to take a pause or they are removed, you know, from resolution group. Not saying that they can't go back in the future, but it also gives us a chance to see how, and this is, you know, some of the benefit of resolution group, to see who might be ready for those more advanced levels, that, you know, there are traumatizing things out in the world, you know, whether it be, you know, going to a certain neighborhood that triggers their PTSD, or, you know, they see something on TV or, you know, an ad they wouldn't necessarily see in the hospital. So it's good to see who would be ready, and it's good information for further assessments, such as risk assessments, such as what's brought up in special class committee, and it's good for the courts to know these type of things, especially if, you know, not getting into too much details, but let's just say they had mood instability, that would that lead to similar behaviors that led to their index crime, for instance. So but yeah, just to add that, but it is an ongoing issue that we want to help that patient with.
Do they ever do, I know they offer treatment on the outside, do they ever do that therapy, and I can't remember what it is, that has something to do with your eyes, but it's trying to remove the trauma from the emotion from the trauma?
I
was going to say EMDR, sorry.
Yeah, we don't do that here. But that could be something we explore in the future. I don't think we have anybody that's certified in that, but that might be something to explore.
I have a question, Dr. Quo, and congratulations on your new position, and thank you for serving. is resolution group or that concept used generally in other forensic hospitals as a condition of progress in toward conditional release?
That's a good question. I can reach out to, you know, Whipshaw and other hospitals. Maybe Mike knows more about that particular. I don't know the particulars of other programs, but it was envisioned with being consistent with kind of community standards.
My informal information, and I've just talked to other places where we get experts in criminal cases, is that nobody else has used it. Nobody heard of it. They ask if it was experimental. I'm not qualified to question, second guess that. But that was, I've yet to find another hospital that has it in the conditional release program as a requirement for getting to SCC.
Holly, I have a question for you. Are the courts requiring this?
No. Okay. The courts don't have any, they don't mandate any clinical provision. And if it were, even if the courts did, for some reason, it requires something, if I didn't believe to a reasonable, if I didn't have experts from top rated psychiatric facilities that said to a reasonable degree of medical to a reasonable degree of psychiatric probability, this was the standard of care and was helpful, I would oppose it. I would oppose the court. I'd file a lawsuit on it to have it removed if the court were requiring it. So that's just my question. Thank you. It's a good question, Kay.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Janine.
Going back to people being triggered and having to re-experience PTSD symptoms and so forth, I do strongly believe that EMDR should be included since it's the gold standard for treating PTSD. Because if they're triggered in the resolution group or wherever, then obviously there's going to be a potential barrier to successful transition to community. If not treated appropriately, it can develop into complex PTSD with psychotic features, et cetera, et cetera. So I do believe that that should be included in treatment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next, I looked at some of the decision letters. There was one surrounding grievance that showed they wanted more therapeutic groups on their ITDP and social groups. And during the investigation, it was found that the person had the opportunity to attend the therapeutic social groups once a week and had chosen not to. For the period of 3 weeks. On one day, they were unable to escort the patient off the unit, but they were able to utilize a patio. So it was not substantiated. Another one was a grievance because they did not want to take an increased level of medicine. The conclusion, that their rights were not being violated according to the administrative code. That was based on that investigation. Another one was about the searches that were conducted. They felt that it was not fair. Based on the investigation, the security team has responded. Oh, they thought that the search was because the BHT doesn't like them. And the grievance was they thought it was retribution or punishment. And what the investigation found is that the security department's responsible for the searches, not the BHTs. on their assumption that the BHT was responsible was not substantiated. It came from the security team. So that one wasn't. Let's see. Another one was about complaining about medical testing. They felt that they didn't feel that their appointments were relevant to their advancement and privileges, and that it was an infringement on rights. That was found that the patient had been refusing medical appointments. No evidence to support claim that they were not moving up in levels if they refused medical appointments. They have a right to refuse medical appointments, but they did not deny their SMI rights in relation to this issue. So it was unsubstantiated, and that was all of those. So with that, do the committee members have anything else to discuss? Except pet therapy, I think we've beaten a dead horse.
Bad analogy.
Yeah. Do we have anything else the committee would like to bring up before we go to public comment?
Quick question. What is that group? IDD, whatever. ID. Oh,
individual treatment D plan, you know, an individual treatment plan. The patient had claimed that in their plan, they're supposed to attend X amount of support groups and therapy groups, and that they were being denied. And in the investigation, they reviewed the videotapes, and the patient had chosen not to go to their.
Got it.
Anyone else from the committee have anything else they'd like to bring up? We do have patients that want visits, some on forensic and some on civil. So we can set up some times to visit. Mike?
Hey, thanks, Lori. Really quick, and I may have missed this earlier. If I did, I apologize. Is the IOC still thinking about setting up like a scheduled time every, not every week, but on a routine basis, just to have a little booth or something that we can assist getting patients over to you?
I would like to do that on civil, if I could get someone that would like to. I mean, the forensic patients typically let us know if they want to visit. The forensic patients, I mean, the civil patients typically want to visit when we're there, when I'm there, right? So I think if we did set up a booth, they would come and talk to us. So we have to come up with a time where two or more people could come. And I see Alice can.
Yeah, just, you know, like I said before, just let us know and we're happy to set up a table for you and have a space set up as long as it, and this is always the difficult part is having like a routine rotation, right? Of making sure, because if you tell the patients we're going to be there every Monday at 10 a.m. for an hour, and then as soon as you don't show up on a Monday at 10 a.m., then we got to build their trust again and everything. So I want to make sure that we do this right.
Okay. Michael again?
Yeah, sorry. That was a mistake.
So we will get with the group and see when we can go. I know Alice is back and is happy to go. I think when we talked last, we said not to go in the morning with breakfast and meds and everything else. I think we talked about maybe early afternoon.
Yeah, that would be absolutely fine. We could do something where, I mean, it's going to be very hot very soon before any of us want it to be. So you could do something where, you know, we have on the civil campus, we have set aside chapel with seats in it mm-hmm. that you could use for that. And then obviously we have the visitation rooms on the units that you could use as well. So whatever works, we'll make it, we'll do our best to accommodate.
Okay. We'll get together and then send you a time. With this group, I don't know if we can say every X day on a month, but I think we could probably say we'll try to get there maybe every 3 weeks.
Would be nice. Yeah, whatever works, or you can even try to figure out like maybe doing like an hour either before or after the forum. That way it's kind of set already in the schedule. But like I said, Lori, however you all want to play it, okay. We'll make it work.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we can, if we're done with business, we can go to public forum. And remember, for public forum, when the patients are talking, and I know you'll ask or pose questions, we can't respond. So we're not trying to be rude or dismissive, but we do hear you. So if we hear something and you do want to visit, we'll come back. Now, remember, this isn't treatment. So we don't want details of your treatment, but if you have overall concerns, safety, if you're not able to exercise your right of religion or form friendships or things like that, we'd like to hear about. So do we have anyone from the public that would like to speak?
This is Admiral Von Sato.
This is Mike Graham.
Hold on.
Well, Seiko, do you want to go first?
Who is this? My grandma?
I just want to mention about the pet therapy. I've seen this work on the in the federal system to great effectiveness. So if they could find a way to do it, I'm sure we can.
Rihanna. Is somebody else?
I think you can go. Go ahead.
Go ahead and go.
Go ahead and go.
Yeah, I have a complaint about my checks being taken away from Social Security retirement and disability and retirement. And I overheard Alice tell me I had to talk to you tonight because she said you're supposed to have me a copy of the action where I signed this paperwork, that you would have it. I haven't signed anything in this hospital. And you haven't, Mike, you haven't signed, you're sitting there lying. Now send the copy of Draxas where I signed it, my money, insurance money over to you, and send it to Alice and Lori. And you prove this. I haven't signed anything in this hospital. How you figure I'm signing my money over to you? What you have done, you took five checks from me worth $2,000. I called up the bank and said, we're gonna put it where we want them. And you committed fraud five times. That's penitentiary time in the United States. You hear me, Mike? Or not?
They can hear you. They can't respond to everything.
Is that it? Send me a copy of it and get it over with.
Oh, please get over it.
This is Dorf Baron from Mojave. I would like to know if we can get a printout on all of the stipulations for our levels. What's the actual criteria that we need to actually follow in order to get the levels? Because I don't want to be sitting here wasting my time thinking that I'm doing something when I really am not. Because I'm going to these groups, but is it helping me? So I just want the criteria, an actual printout, so I know how I'm supposed to actually level. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kate, talk to them. Make sure they give me a copy of what I signed. The reason I've been waiting 2 weeks for it is because it's never been, there is no copy. There is no sign. I get the copy.
Do we have any other patients that would like to speak or anyone else from the public?
Yeah, this is Timber Bristol. I'm Sego. How you doing? Can you hang up Dorka or Mike, one of you guys?
All right, sorry.
Tim, are you there? Tim, if you're speaking, you're on mute.
Oh. Hello?
Hello, we can hear you now.
Hello?
We can hear you now. Hello?
Hello? Okay. Hi. It was said that the hospital vendor does not provide tampons for the females. Well, they provide condoms here, which kind of surprised me. Yes, very funny. We do get 55 minutes outside a day. That's not enough out on the mall. Because when we see each other wearing groups, there's no talking and hanging out really, except for games group. And some of these groups, a lot of these groups are not, I wouldn't consider treatment, like relaxation and things, just petty little groups that aren't teaching me anything about myself. I've done that on my own. And they consider this treatment. I was sent here by Arizona State Courts to do time, not treatment, as far as I know. And the thing you guys were talking about missing medical appointments, I believe that's a requirement, even though state law states that I'm allowed, that I have the right to refuse medical services if I choose. Well, one of the requirements to keep employment here at ASH for the patients is to attend all medical groups. So I don't know, that's breaking the law right there, because you're coercing me to either go to my medical group appointment or I can't have my job. Let's see. The search thing, I would probably say that the tech who was being retaliatory called security and told them to initiate a search, so it looks like it wasn't them. How do you build new buildings here at ASH when you can't provide hot sauce to people on their trays without a doctor's order, which I don't see how a doctor's going to say it's necessary for you to have hot sauce. The ventilation here, you guys are talking about echoing and stuff and putting things up, dampers to kill this noise, and how hard it would be to clean around them. The vents, all they do is wipe off the outside of the vent. The inside has never been cleaned. I guarantee you this by all the people that have sinus issues on Sago, closer to Van Buren. And they're just dusty all the time. Dust blows out of them onto your floor. That's why they say they need to clean your room. You say a lead tech hasn't been here 90 days and he's a lead tech now. How are they supposed to know their job and teach their other peers how to do their job if they don't even know it themselves? When you request records or copies of your grievances, appeals, extensions, IRs, over 40 pages now, it costs you $15. I asked for this, a copy of these prior to the new rule change, and after the fact, I was told that they came back and told me that, well, you have to pay $15. When I had asked them earlier that day if I could have them, then they said, oh, a new rule is in effect, so I have to pay $15 that I really don't have. Medical problems here are a big issue. They're talking about, I can't remember what they're talking about, but a lot of people's medical problems are, have blind eye turn towards them. Somebody just died here of cancer. He kept complaining, hey, I got stomach problems. Well, he had pancreatic cancer, stage 4, when they finally found out, because they did nothing, as is they do other things, nothing for other patients, if you know who I'm talking about. Hiring people from assisted living, that would be better, because it seems like all they're hiring people is from DOC. They're trying to turn this place more into a prison. They're not trying, they are. Staff stays up, talks late at night, and that's going with the dampers, and the doors constantly slam, slam, slam. Well, that's about it for me. Thank you for listening to me. And I would like it if you guys could visit me. I'm doing very well, though. And I was just listening to some of your things that you're bringing up and want to touch on them. I'm doing great. And so could you see me, though? I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else? Okay, with no one being heard, do we have a motion to adjourn? We don't. Oh,
this
do we have another patient?
Mojave again?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm going to back off of what Tim was saying about the noise from the staff. There are certain staff here, certain shifts, that they are up and on average between 2 and 4 in the morning. They are loud and they wake me up, and I have insomnia as it is. So that's the issue that we need to address, and they all need to know that for all the units, because not just on this unit that I had an issue with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Tim. One last time, please. They're talking about resolution group and being the process that's necessary for progression. There's a lot of people that deal with a lot of PTSD from their index offense that has nothing to do with their daily life. This was a hiccup or whatever you want to call it. And there's no getting better or recovery from mental illness. It's just you are in therapy or you're not getting better as you're stabilized. That's all it is. And let's say I had a lot of PTSD, and I wouldn't want to revisit that and go through all the stuff. And the people's crimes, yes, they were psychotic at the time. That's why it's called GEI, guilt, except, I mean, I'm sorry, NGRI, no, GEI, guilt, except insane. 99% of us were insane at the time of our crime. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. All these groups of drug addiction and all this, that's a stigma. I've seen commercials on TV where it says, mental illness can't wait. Well, what does that have to do with, drugs? I don't know. But these rehab groups, it's not, I just feel like I'm talking and nobody's listening, though, sometimes. But thank you.
Okay. Anyone else that we haven't heard from? Okay. With that, we'll try to get over and visit. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Going to executive session, or are we just adjourning?
We didn't have anything for executive session. We have to, if we have something we want to talk about in executive session, we have to let it be known so we can put it on the agenda.
My copy of the agenda says that there's a confidential incident report discussion, an IOC membership discussion, and a letter received through the ADOA.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I was going off my notes of what I did. So let me look. Larry, can you put the executive session link into the chat, because I don't have that open.
I'll need the phone number and the PIN.
I'm looking for.
Lori, the executive session link, that's a standing item. So okay. If you don't have anything to discuss, we don't have to go into it. So that's up to you to decide. But I will pull it, the contact information, and put that in the chat.
Okay, so we don't have any new members. I did have a discussion with Leon Canty, and he called me from back east, and he is interested in rejoining. So I did tell him he'd have to reapply. But Larry, I don't know if you've gotten his application.
I have not.
But Leon was he always gave good perspective of someone that was in there, worked the program, got out, is doing well.
Okay.
I just want a little clarification from you, Kay, because you just read off a number of things that were supposed to be discussed in executive session. But looking at the agenda, as Lori pointed out, that would have to be on the agenda. And I'm looking at the agenda, I see nothing about going into executive session. So I'm a little befuddled.
It's section E on the second page, executive session. I see it.
Okay, for the committee, does anyone have anything? Because we did talk about some of the content of the issues of the letters we received, and we did not have anyone for anyone that's any applications.
I guess we just have a motion for adjournment, and so I motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, we will see you guys later. I will contact you to see when we can set up visits for the patients, both on the civil and on the forensic visits.
And Lori, I have a list for the forensic patients, so I'll contact you.
Thank you, guys. And thanks right.
Thank you,
hard you guys work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.